All right, we're going to get started. I'd like to call to order the November 6, 2025 Facility Standards Manual Public Review Committee meeting. No members are participating remotely, and committee members disclose that they are members of one or more affected groups, and their respective declarations of interest are kept on file in the minutes of the Facility Standards Manual Public Review Committee. Everybody got a package from Laura. Got a few things on our agenda, and one kind of really new item that we're going to get to at the very end of the meeting. We have public.
Did you want to make any public comments? Okay.
No. Okay. All right. We have minutes from our last meeting on October 16th. Open the floor to any amendments or edits. If there are none, I'd appreciate a motion to approve.
So moved.
Who was that?
Aye.
Oh, thank you. Second? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Awesome. Laura, did you want to go over the meeting schedule for next year? Is that?
I would like to, but before I go there, I will say, I know we talked about in our coordination meeting that we have three more meetings this year. So we have one more meeting in November and two more meetings in December. They're all sort of subject to discussion about whether we would have them based on progress and things like that. So in our coordination meetings, Kevin and Pete will help us make those calls. But we are supposed to be in this room. For the remainder of the year, I will say the third Thursday, the setup's going to be whatever it is because it's BZA night and I have to honor their layout. So I might say things looking a little different for our second meeting back. But next year, I was surprised that this room was actually booked a couple times, even though it's recently reopened, including the very last meeting that I was trying to schedule the whole year. So it must be for a holiday party. I was not able to get it, but what I generally did was I kept our meeting schedule the first and the third Thursday from 3 to 5. January 1st is a holiday, so I just said we wouldn't meet on that first meeting date of the new year. January 15th, the room was booked, but I had options. I booked the Percival room, which is the room that you walk past to come in here, or our room at Sicklin Road. I wonder if the Percival room is really big enough for us. People tell me it is. I am suspicious of that. No.
I think it'd be really tight. Yeah.
That's what I think too, but.
I think if Sicklin's open, I'd go.
Okay, so we prefer Sicklin. Okay. Okay. And then the only other meeting, July 2nd, we could technically meet, but the 3rd is the holiday for the 4th of July weekend. And we tend to have trouble with attendance because people are traveling. So I was going to go ahead and cancel that one as well. That's what I was proposing. August meetings are tentative. And then the same thing for December 17th. We would round out the year either in person or Sicklin, but we'll pick Sicklin. I booked them both, so you have your choice. And then the other option too is, of course, we currently can have up to 25% of the meetings remotely. We could decide to do that. We'll be doing a bylaws update next year sometime that will actually take that figure to 50%. But they can't be back to back. So
I think if we're meeting twice a month, we want to take advantage of that as much as we can. Yeah. That's my opinion. Mm-hmm.
So that would be something we can talk some more about and when we want to weave those in. I did reserve these rooms. I will make sure that I cancel my reservation for Percival. But basically what I'm trying to do is get approval of this calendar so that I can post this on the public calendar for next year.
Good with it.
Okay. Anybody have any concerns about schedule? Okay. And we're okay with not having, we'll have one meeting in January and one in July, and we'll just plan accordingly.
Just a heads, I may not be here for the November 20th meeting.
Our next meeting here, yeah. This year.
Yeah. Depends on how fast I drive back from Kansas.
You want to call in? From, you can tell us what state you're in. Okay, thank you for that. I needed to get that done.
All right. And, you know, our topic at the last meeting was primarily focused on floodplain. We felt that it was getting in some ways so technical, in some ways options, what if and whatnot, that it would be helpful to form a work group, which we did. The work group has had one meeting, is my understanding so far. It's made up of two participants from the PRC. I don't know how many from outside you wound up getting. Who has an update for their?
I think we're all going to participate in this update. I think we're just like a group update. So I will start. Yes, we did have our first floodplain work group meeting on October 29th. This committee really delivered because I needed six more members and I got six more members. So we had a complement of eight. It was perfect. And everybody came but one person who said that they couldn't attend the first meeting but would attend the subsequent meeting. So that worked out great. At our first meeting, we posed a couple just kind of broad questions about floodplains, how they do work in other jurisdictions. What do you have to submit for an alteration? You know, our discussions in this work group are focused on floodplain alterations. We got a lot of really good initial feedback. And we have two more meetings scheduled for, my first meeting was October 29th, two more meetings scheduled for November 12th and November 19th. And those, what I did is I sent out the actual draft text, the last version you all saw of chapter 5, to focus in more specifically on the alteration text at the next two meetings. And it is our hope to be able to report out to the full committee in December. That's the goal, is to report out. Gwen and Maggie, you want to add anything?
Do you have a question first, Brian?
Is the goal to come out of that meeting with updated draft language for us? Okay.
Yes. Did you have anything?
No. The only other update I wanted to let you guys know is that Maggie and I went to ZOC, because we've been reporting back and forth, right? Related to the item that was brought forward by members of this group about accessory structures to residential use, particularly allowing particular items of a certain size. We're talking about dog houses and all of that. So we had made a recommendation of a certain square footage. They have asked to have some additional time to basically go back and look at that square footage and propose. In a couple weeks, they're going to give us some proposed recommendations, and then we will be going back to them again the first meeting in December, hopefully to button that issue up. So the other item they asked us to go back and look at for the zoning ordinance was just related to fencing associated with agricultural uses. So we're just also going back and just looking at what we have for that and reporting that back out to them. So just an FYI, because it kind of originated here, that's what's going on.
And then Megan and Phil, did you want to make any comments about our first floodplain work group meeting?
I thought it was just a really good group of folks and it was a good conversation. I don't think there's really too many specifics to share because we haven't actually talked about the language in the FSM yet. It was a very general discussion, but I think very good just to get an understanding of everyone's experiences, especially how it pertains to the community interacting with FEMA. It's kind of a big subject of conversation, but I think the next couple updates will be a little more specific as we kind of get into those, you know, specific items.
I mean, I think the big takeaway was there was a lot of different experience with the different sizes of projects that require different things, which kind of helped expand like the different discretion we have for what triggers what. I'd be interested to the size stuff that you're talking about for the accessory uses. I'd be interested to see how that triggers with our current discussion that we're having on no rises and minor projects and alteration analyses and stuff like that.
We don't really have
an update on that.
As soon as we tie it up, we can talk about how that's going to work, but we need to tie it up. The language itself that was originally proposed is on the ZOC meeting. So if anyone wants to see what we originally proposed as staff, you can look at it there, or I don't know, Laura, if you can just send it out to everybody. And then, so once we have that handled, but I understand, I mean, it's going to be, it's not just going to be that particular use. It's a bunch of different uses that are in that table that would have to comply with those items that you're talking about.
To the extent we get into beyond uses and numeric, whatever thresholds, will you keep the work group kind of apprised of that?
Yeah. Once Zach makes a determination, I'll let you guys know what the, is that what you're asking me?
Well, I think there's that, there's some things that are numerically appropriate to be in the zoning orders. And sometimes when we talk about floodplain issues, it becomes more of a potentially technical issue. Mm-hmm. And I'd love for the work group to be maybe having some commentary that could be shared with Zach, if that is appropriate.
I guess it depends on like what that is, I would say. Obviously the director has the floodplain work group working specifically on FSM and not necessarily the uses. But if there's something that impacts it, like you're saying, then of course we'll bring that up.
Okay.
Yeah. I've been kind of filtering back and forth depending on what we're hearing, if there are issues that people think that should go.
Yeah, I don't want to see the FSM committee or its work group tied down with use questions.
Yeah.
It's more along the lines of when a certain size of that use triggers the different engineering stuff and all that other things.
So right now the language is proposing a cap. So you would be able to go up to a square footage and that's it. Nothing above.
Yeah. And to Maggie's point, like she said during Zoc, the point of that is to not to be comfortable in a place where we don't need engineering analysis for those small, really, really small items if we can.
So I guess the feedback from this committee would be from an engineering perspective, what kind of project is small enough that you wouldn't want to give or wouldn't need to do analysis for?
And I think that's kind of what we were discussing last.
Yeah, I think that was a whole subject of conversation in that last work group meeting, which.
And I think in terms of like your uses, I think you should just make it what you're comfortable with. Like, for example, you have accessory uses are usually allowed up to 600 square feet. Whether or not that triggers an engineering analysis or not, that's kind of more of an FSM thing versus is it up to 600 feet allowed? And then what are the permitting processes for us to issue in order to support from 0 to 600?
Well, it's not 600, so. It's much smaller. It's like, right now we're posting, I think one of the numbers that came up in committee was 50 square feet. It's for like play sets. Right.
Yeah, play sets are bigger than 50 square feet. Because if you're talking about
that's
like,
what they're going to come back with.
Yeah.
It sounds like a discussion.
If there's a possibility to allow some input from the work group on that, I think it'd be helpful so that it doesn't get locked down too soon without that technical input. I'm just going to request. So I don't want to hash it out here. Mm-hmm. I think we have a work group of experts that are hopefully can provide some insight.
So do you foresee members of this committee coming to Doc to offer feedback? I guess I'm not sure how we want it to, what the feedback looks like.
I think that what we're trying to say is like, as best as possible, we're trying to keep the technical element of this out of the zoning ordinance. That's what we're trying to say.
Yeah. And if there's a technical question, I would think that input from some element of the PRC would be appropriate. There's numbers in the zoning ordinance that pertain to density and aesthetics and appearance, and that's fine. But when we talk about a number that is theoretically derived from some potential impact to a floodplain, does Zoc have the expertise to really? Staff's proposing something, but is Zoc saying, well, whatever.
So I guess, we have the language. Laura can send it out. And maybe once this committee takes a look at it, they'll have a better sense of what the language says and what we're proposing. And that might have a better idea of where the input can be provided.
That'd be helpful. I think from my perspective, we stay in our lane. We're not going to go attend ZOC meetings and petition one way or the other. I'd like to work through staff and.
Yeah, I mean, I think it to your point, I think that it would, I mean, how it is implemented in terms of the requirements on analysis or needed or not needed is an FSM thing. So irrespective of the size. Now, I think the goal of what the accessory, the goal from a staff perspective related to this accessory use is to try to limit it to a size that's not going to require analysis, because these are like homeowners who are putting these things in. Now, if they're over a certain threshold, they're either, and again, this is for something that's currently not allowed in the zoning ordinance.
Right.
So this is us saying, okay, we're okay from a staff perspective adding it, but there has to be a limit in terms of what seems feasible and is not going to really have an impact. So that's kind of where we're coming from.
Right. And I'm not saying don't still do that. I'm just saying the decision of what's going to have an impact or not should kind of be left as to that no rise process that we're discussing, not to just kind of figure out a number that can eliminate that, like figure out if it's an allowed permitted use or not in the zoning, and then up to the size of what is going to require a no rise and what's not going to require a no rise, that should just be kind of left to an FSM thing. Whereas,
and where all this is coming from is we saw it with the zoning ordinance update. I mean, there was a lot of examples where we all sat here and were like, why did the zoning ordinance write it this way? We're kind of handcuffed. And I think that's where this commentary is coming from. Is yeah. We don't want to get back to that place if it hasn't been thought about.
Yeah, because I mean, depending on the floodplain, not all floodplains are equal. So like you said, 50 square foot here could be fine, but another 50 square foot at another place isn't fine. So like the room for like allowing up to the standard accessory amount and then determining what triggers a permit, you know, would be the permit triggers would kind of be run through the FSM standard.
So then what are we gaining by adding it to the zoning ordinance? Because the whole point was that we wanted to make it so that homeowners could add, it's not feasible. If they're going to have to do a no-rise certificate for their playset, the cost of that is just not feasible. So we're allowing a use that monetarily takes.
That's not necessarily true, because the cost that one person quoted wasn't feasible, but there are inexpensive costs to be able to do a no-rise certification. Not all of them are $5,000.
So I'd like to stop the conversation. I hear you. Just having the input from that work group would, I think, maybe alleviate commentary when the thing comes, the zoning text comes to public comment, right?
Yeah, and I guess the whole point was, the point is to allow something, whereas something is not currently allowed now. So like if someone did put something there, there's no way for us to fix the violation besides taking it down. If you have a square footage allowed, at least we can figure out through engineering FSM procedures, we could justify it being allowed. So it's more of a...
I think they hear the concern. Let's just kind of stop it there. Right. Message sent, received, yep, and comment back and forth. Okay. Thank you. What is engineering plan clearances?
So this is going to be sad, but I think we're switching seats. I have it right here. I can queue it right up.
Okay.
I'm just going to put it up on the screen for him. He's going to tell us what these are. As soon as I
think
I'm my spot.
Bye. Thank you.
Would you want to stay?
Yes.
We're nice people. We're fun to hang out with.
Plans to review.
They have no rice certification.
What's that?
This is an ominous title.
Yeah, it's dark, right?
It's very dark. Factor.
Yeah. And mysterious. All right. Well, thank you. Most of you have probably heard me talk about this idea of moving into a modified approval process where we move away from conditional approvals. So that's what we're finally there, and I just wanted to go through that with you. So with this group, I don't really need to go into a huge background of what engineering plans are. Our division process is really three base types, at least as far as the approval processing goes. You've got your subdivision CPAPs, your road-only CPAPs, and then your site plans. moving on, like I said, subdivision construction plans are subordinate to a record plat and eligible for full approval when all those comments are addressed. We typically approve the plan, set the bond amount, and then you move on to your record plat. Site plans and road-only construction plans, currently what we do is issue a conditional approval pending recording of easements and posting of performance bonds so that we can monitor that, because there's no other application that is needed at that point, you know, other than your permits. But in theory, we need to have that all in place before those permits are released. Conditional approvals originally were intended just simply to provide a pathway for earthwork to begin earlier in the process. And even economic development often uses that when they pitch to different groups trying to attract business. The issues with this process, this is out of the state code, and for engineering, I'll just read this real quick. Site plan shall be deemed final once it has been reviewed and approved by the locality if the only requirements remaining to be satisfied to get a building permit are the posting of bonds and escrows or the submission of any other administrative documents. So the big ticket there is that once we get to this approval or this conditional approval, the plan is considered final under state code. And we have found that can cause problems with vested rights or questions on vested rights whenever changes are made or requested of us to make changes, and it can be a problematic issue. For stormwater, this is out of our codified ordinances, section 1096. And ultimately what this boils down to is that the maintenance agreement and associated easements really are supposed to be submitted prior to approval of the stormwater plan, which is really the opposite of how we handle it now. So now we approve the engineer plans, then the easements usually come in with the maintenance agreements. And so what we often see is a blank deed gets submitted sort of as a way to check that box, which really is not all that useful for anyone. For industry, our approval process tends to represent a significant regulatory hurdle due to the lack of flexibility, which we talked about before. When we get to conditional approval, we're pretty much final at that point. And so there's really little flexibility there for changes to be made. So the solution we've come up with is plan clearances. And the plan clearance signifies that the plans are progressed to a point where certain milestones can be permitted without issuing a full plan approval. We've identified three tiers: the mapping clearance, the entrance correct clearance, and the technical clearance. So diving into them, the mapping clearance allows for application and obtaining an address, as well as the application of building and zoning permits. Criteria are that the mapping comments need to be addressed and access easements need to be submitted for review. This can be considered on request if this is on the critical path for your project. So it's not really something that we're going to offer up as a regular practice, but we can entertain that on request if that's what needs to happen. The entrance correct clearance allows the submission of the VDOT entrance permit. And the criteria are that VDOT comments need to be addressed, as well as ENS and archaeology comments pertaining to the entrance area. And this also is more of a on-request type thing. You see this, the value in this a lot, I think, when we have maybe a rural subdivision where, let's say, the health department can't sign off on the plan because they don't have test wells drilled or something like that, but they can't get out there to do that because the plan isn't approved. So this allows us to break that circular sort of relationship and allow things to move forward.
And that's set upon request also,
yes.
Not as a routine.
Right. Okay. If that's on a critical path or whatever. And I know I said that clearances don't really apply to subdivisions, but that's when I say all that, I'm really talking the technical clearance, and that's what this one is. This is more of a direct replacement to conditional approval. We're going to allow for grading, and as well as the other things we just mentioned, VDOT entrance, addressing, and the application of your permits. The criteria is really that most comments need to be addressed or are very close to being addressed. Zoning, we shouldn't be having any zoning major issues with the use or entitlements there. Environmental permits need to be submitted and finalized, as well as any floodplain applications. We are asking that, again, access easements be submitted and then also performance bonds. And that, sorry, yeah, that's so direct replacement of conditional approval. Summary table of what we just discussed. So this is mapping out the current process as it relates to the grading permit. So right now what we do, we get an application submitted, review it until we get to a conditional approval. Usually at that point, the grading permit gets submitted. And during that review, you're advised on you know, finalizing those wetlands permits or getting those letters in place to allow the grading permit to be issued and earthwork to begin. Once our bonds and everything are in place, we can issue a final plan approval and then you can apply for your permits. Construction begins at the issuance of the grading permit. And then under this new process, we would get our application. We're going to review and advise that those environmental permits get finalized during our review of the plans. A grading permit can be submitted concurrently at this point, at least the application for it, because ENS is also reviewing the plans. So the idea is we're removing some of that duplicated effort that often happens in that linear process. We're going to get to a technical clearance, and that should then allow the grading permit to be issued. And then you're into a plan approval and building zoning permits. And what I want to show here is that construction, we aren't changing that or moving that in any way. So all the same steps that have to be done now is going to be, you know, apply moving forward. Currently, we can be flexible up until we issue that conditional approval. As we talked, at that point, the plan is considered final and under state code. Moving forward, we could entertain design changes all the way up until we actually approve the plan. So again, mapping out the process this time with respect to your bonds and easements. Application is submitted. Currently, we get to a conditional approval. The PM issues a bond estimate approval letter. And at that point, we normally see the bonds and easements submitted and processed, get to final approval and then permits. Moving forward, going to get that bond amount letter out much sooner. It's going to take some coordination with all referrals and the engineer to make sure that we're all comfortable with moving forward with that number. Technical clearance, you know, will be achieved as we go through the process, but bonds and easements can be submitted and reviewed concurrently, as well as the building permits. So we're actually going to have engineering staff doing review of the zoning permits to flush out any discrepancies that can then be fixed while the site plan is still in an active status. Impacts to foundation only consideration. These are permits that limit that we, as a concession, the director can issue the building permit ahead of plan approval and limit it to foundation only. So no vertical construction. And this is a discretion meant to be business friendly. And it's not an entitlement or anything that is that the county's forced to do under code. So being that we are going to be in a place where we actually aren't going to be approving the plan till the end, we feel we really need to be careful with issuing any building permits ahead of that actual approval. So really, we're moving forward. We really only want to entertain these when there are maybe some last minute utility changes that need to, that might affect your easements and just the simple processing of those. And bonds must be posted and in place for consideration of foundation only building permits. Moving forward again. So we tried to brainstorm on some potential issues that might arise as part of this, some confusions that might happen. So let's say the developer wishes to fully abandon the project after we've issued clearances and grading work has begun. Plans, since they haven't been approved, the applicant can withdraw the application, and erosion and sediment control would work with everyone to stabilize the site, perform the necessary inspections, and release the grading bond. And any performance bonds that were submitted could be withdrawn or administratively released if they got to that position. Let's say the developer wishes to revise their design after clearances have been granted and grading work has begun. The applicant may revise their design and simply resubmit the plans because they're still active. You can just send it back through owner review. The existing clearance remains in effect and is subject to the previous design until the revised layout achieves that same technical level clearance. Any addressing that could be affected would just, you'd have to go back through and reapply for addressing, which is not any different than what we do now when we take a spam for any changes that happen. Let's say the project reaches a design or a technical clearance and does not proceed to addressing final comments, doesn't follow through with recording the easements or posting the bonds. 6 months goes by, the application will be deemed inactive under the LSDO and be subject to all updated regulations upon reactivation. So, in conclusion, the current conditional approval system is going to be replaced with a system of plan clearances with three tiers, the mapping, entrance correct, and the technical clearance. And we believe the benefits with this system for the staff, for internal staff, the process more closely complies with state code. There's going to be fewer revision applications. And it should reduce confusion at plans review, permitting, and bond release. We believe that concurrent processing of supporting documents will reduce the overall processing timelines. What I want to show here is really think that the same benefits are going to be for industry, with the addition of greater flexibility on as you work through it. Any questions?
And is this going to be rolled out?
So that's we're doing a lot of presentations with both internal staff and industry groups. We're probably looking at an early 26 rollout, and even now probably advising on plans coming in. One thing we think, if we didn't advise someone up front that this is how we were going to run, we think we would just move forward with the conditional approvals the way we normally do. So there is going to be a transitional period there for potentially a while as we phase that out.
You say conditional approval, you have this STPL and the CPAP, right?
Mm-hmm.
CPAP, we get approval.
Yep.
Is that process changing on the CPAP at all? CPAP staying the same.
Right.
This is really just applying to site plans.
Yeah, at least as far as that technical clearance, what replaces the conditional approval. In theory, you could request a mapping clearance on your CPAP if you needed that for something.
But you're not going to issue addresses if we haven't reported a plat on the CPAP.
Right.
Yeah.
That's where I see the entrance correct one. We've had that come up. It's not all the time, but it's also not a rare thing where they need to get out there and do something.
Yeah.
They need that entrance established, and that's why we wanted to put that in there. But no, most your subdivision CPAPs should not change at all.
You're not going to, I guess, post the bond with those to get the approval.
No.
Okay. This is more just towards STPL.
Yeah. Okay. I would like the PMs to get in the habit of issuing the bond estimate letters as soon as possible. You just have that information sooner. But yeah, we wouldn't.
You go back and see the slide.
Yeah.
Flow chart one. The one that you've had the current. Right? Yeah. Right now you get conditional approval, right, to give you your amount, and says you got to report the easements, right, to get the final approval.
Yeah.
But today you can go get a grading permit off that conditional approval letter.
Mm.
New one would be
clearance.
You're submitting the bond amount during the plan review, which we're doing now, but you're going to get that approved sooner in the process. You're not going to get a conditional approval. You've got to record those easements, post that bond to get to
submit them.
We just need them.
Yeah, we really pushed hard to make it as business friendly as we could, because there's a lot of worry doing some of this stuff ahead of a plan approval. So we got everyone to pretty much agree, just get them in the door, and we could be, you know, everyone's green lights at that point. So it's not necessarily go through the whole thing and get posted, but get your bonds in.
Derek, posting the bond? No, not posting the bond, sorry. Requesting and submitting the bond. You're not paying anything on that yet, right?
As soon as you get the bond, you get an invoice, yeah.
Yeah, for them, it's real, and we acknowledge that.
Okay.
Well, there's a lot of back and forth with the agreements and the county attorney's office that takes time for.
Yes, is it? So this is what I was trying to get at with the BVAG thing was.
I guess you.
We wouldn't even apply this to a CPAP?
Unless it's a road only type thing, if you're extending a highway as part of a proffer or something. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So you can submit your building permits theoretically sooner.
Yes.
Okay.
I think we're in a place where we want that because we want to take a look at your architecturals, make sure that we're not, there's no discrepancies there because then it's just a simple fix rather than a spam at the last minute that everyone's stressing about.
So what about, you said that theoretically you could have changes while you're got a grading permit. What happens to the bond that's already been agreed to? What happens to, I guess it goes back through a zoning review.
So the bond, for changes, we're typically looking at order of magnitude type stuff. So if we're saying, oh, there's 10 more feet of storm pipe, we're probably not going to ask to change the bond for that. Okay. If the design changes to a point where we really need to entertain increases, that's kind of the risk that's, taken by submitting. So again, it's there's going to be a lot of coordination to say, Peyton, I'm going to go ahead and get this bond estimate nailed down,
right.
And you're going to say, no, we're going to make changes.
Do you have to post like a brand new bond or could you potentially post the difference? And now you have two bonds.
I think they're getting away from trying to do increases where they would want to get a replacement bond and then release the other one. I would have to talk to the county attorney still working through some of those
mechanics. So there's a potential you would, and I think it's still the case now, that you have to have two bonds posted and you won't release the first one until the second one gets posted, right?
It's posted, yeah. Didn't
you do a rider?
Yeah, don't you do a rider in that case? Exactly. I've asked that question. It sounds like they're really trying to get away from riders just meant to increase. And in this case, I think, we would be seeing the design change so much. At least that's the thought, right? We wouldn't be asking for an extra $5,000 on a
$1 million bond. It's a significant change.
Yeah, so if it changed to that point, we probably would be safer doing the whole thing over again. And I don't know, this is all new, right? So maybe we can release the original sooner if we haven't approved the plan,
That sounds right.
With having the bond amount letter so far forward, that as the plan is changing, the bond estimate's changing. Do you worry that that's going to become a thing that's approved this letter and the plan is changing? Now that's out of date.
Yeah, that's not the goal. I don't think. Like I said, order of magnitude type stuff.
Typically, doing the bond and easements at the end makes sense because you've done all the engineering set, and then now you're saying this is the bond amount. We're set.
Yeah.
Pulling it forward, you probably run the risk that, there's a comment that affects the bond that you've approved. Then you got to change it. Or the easements aren't in that flow chart, but I assume they're somewhere near the bond amount letter. Bonds and easements are together, I guess.
Yeah, I guess that top line, I could extend that even further to the left. Once we send the bond amount letter, you could submit your bond.
Right? That'd be my worries that the bond and easement review being at the end kind of makes sense just in the engineering is done. The bonds and easements are just memorializing the engineering.
Yeah.
If they're so early in the process, you may just be dealing with a lot of back and forth, as the plan changes.
It was what I needed to do to get everyone on board with allowing these milestones to happen without actually approving the plan. So it's especially the stormwater regulate,
What's the push for getting the bond so early? What's the risk from the county? Are you going to pull a bond while we're still going through design?
I can't talk ENS into giving you a grading permit.
Well, that's a separate
not based on, well, no, it isn't. You need, in order to approve the stormwater plan, what we talked about is if the performance bond gets submitted, they felt that that met the intent of the regulation. And then everyone was in agreement that, yeah, we haven't signed the actual plan. We've got enough comments are addressed. We're at a place where we could let the grading permit move forward. You know what I mean? And then that was all part of that conversation. And that's why we're asking for the performance bonds to be submitted.
The performance bond is to satisfy a stormwater requirement.
Pretty much, yeah.
The grading bond is just for ENS.
Yeah, and that whole process remains. So our letter would go out and say, the plan, you know, the plans are in a place where you could be cleared to do these things because you've met this criteria with these things left to go for plan approval. And then as far as the grading permit application, all those administrative things that need to happen for them are still in place.
And those are all, we're still doing those as independent applications. It's still a grading permit being applied for, still VSMP permit.
Yes, yep.
Where does all this get codified in a narrative format?
The new process?
Well, I don't even think the current process is written down.
It's not.
There's information in here about conditional approval.
Yeah, the conditional, yeah. But
I'm working on it. So I'm trying.
I mean, I like the pictures. Can we issue a tech memo with a picture and say
that was the whole communication plan? Part of it's just getting around talking to everyone. If there's any suggestions that we need to consider, I want to take that input.
Gotcha.
And then we talked about sending probably a tech memo and then maybe even recording like a webinar that's available. So
the biggest issue with the current process is that people get site plan approved, they go out and start building stuff and things need to change in the field, and that they keep having, there's multiple spams that have to get memorialized and approved. And
And so you might not entirely eliminate that. If you get all the way through an approval, you know, and revise your plan 5 years later, take a spam for that. But the idea is to remove the need to have three or four of these processing all at the same time, you know.
You're saying we can keep changing the plan as we're building?
We see that a lot.
In this process, the plan's still open. Like, we can keep changing.
So it's open until it's not. So if at the last minute Loudoun Water gives you a comment, you have to shift your water line 10 feet. We don't need a spam for that anymore, assuming we're still working through all this. We just resubmit the plan. If you decide you want to add a mezzanine, 1,200 more square feet, I don't need to have a spam for that. You just resubmit the plan. We'll have it verified and you're on your way.
What process would I be in? Like at that, with that final plan approval, when trying to like understand, like on an actual like multifamily site, let's say, like I get to final to get started and go build the project, have a pre-con, do I have final plan approval or
no?
No.
It gives you the ability not to.
So the multifamily ones, that's a really good example, because one of the things we want to do is be able to take both scenarios, both funding scenarios. If you got an AHU building, and if that doesn't get approved, you would want to do ADUs. We can review both instances. We couldn't approve both. We can issue that clearance, and we've had success with Virginia Housing actually accepting that letter saying the plans are in good shape and do what they do. You get word on whether you're approved or not, remove the sheets you don't need. Bonds get finalized because they're already in process, and we issue approval at that point.
But once I start construction, the plan is approved. That's why I'm not
building construction.
That seems like
building construction.
No building construction.
Site work. That seems like a little bit of a recipe for disaster, though, because like, developers were
the risk.
We bend the rules, right? So.
For yourself.
I'm saying people like having the approved plan there is holding everybody to account. Like, how do you say, well, I'm just going to change this, you know?
You still have to submit a revision.
You work within the loopholes that are in the system.
Yeah.
Well, so you're not going to get your building permits without site plan approval.
Final site
plan. So if you change limits of disturbance or something, and you then you're right. Going to have to resubmit the same active plan. We'll have that approved, you know, reviewed, get to that same place. You know, and at that point, it's all the same exercise of getting everything done. You sign off on the plan that clears you then for your building and zoning permit.
I just think it needs to be very clear that it's just developer risk, right? I think that needs to be emphasized.
So let's say I get to this, I gave pre-con, I started the project, I'm building it. I want to change the clearing limits. I have my engineer change the clearing limits, submitted, but I can't do it until you issue a new
technical clearance.
Right. Yeah.
Right. You can continue working with what you were cleared for before. Yeah. So like if you're, I don't know, if this is your limits and we said you're clear for this and then you do this. So now this would really is not part of the project anymore, but this added area is.
You can't go to that added area.
I
can't do it though until you issue a new technical clearance would be the term.
Yeah.
And then once, let's say the project gets base paved and we start a building, you're saying that's the time when it's over.
You have to have your final site plan approval once you want that building started.
Then after that point, any change further after that point is a spam, let's say.
Right.
So during the development process, you can make changes to the plan and get new technical clearances, is what you're saying. Okay.
Are they getting a new VESMP permit? If I add 5 acres
they need
of grading?
To, yeah, if they change it that much, then and that's where we could be in looking at a different bond if it's that substantial. But that's not usually what we're seeing. We're not.
Yeah.
It's usually the minor things that
can you go over the minor flexibility. Things again?
What's that?
Can you go over the minor things again, or? Where that was on the side, it's a lot to retain.
The minor changes?
Yeah.
It could be might have a building footprint change a little bit.
I mean, the classic example, Megan, that we deal with all the time is
control panel.
We're normally, this is a civil land plan, we're normally way ahead of the architecture.
Right.
Architecture comes in and then we got to make updates, and it happens all the time.
So instead of a spam,
it's just a resubmission.
It's a spam, and they're waiting on building permits. Because that's where they're at.
Yeah.
And we got to put a brand new application through the ringer. And then we have to explain the referrals that no, the change was just here. It's not the whole site. You know, we go through that. This way, it's still the same application. It's only the applicable referrals that we need to worry about.
Well, what's helpful here as well is, at least I'm thinking in the current, it could be something in the future as well. It's like a common thing I see right now is like you get your plan approved by the county and then Loudoun Water sells 3 reviews after you finish your plan.
Yep.
And no. And then you have to do a spam to incorporate Loudoun Water provisions into your application, which is extremely difficult. So
question on the go ahead, Pete.
Oh, so that's good for now. And like maybe Loudoun Water corrects their way they do things, but then you know, maybe VDOT then has this process or it allows other outside referral agencies to the process to continue as those outside referral agencies finish.
We've also had times where let's say there's a building code change about to happen.
Yep.
Need to get your building permits in to sort of be grandfathered and you've done the work at that point. That's where a mapping clearance can come in and that we can let that rather than try to do some sort of conditional approval that we're not ready for.
Is there the only thing I could think of maybe one take up is sometimes we don't close on properties until we have site plan approval, like that conditional approval is what someone's giving to us to then we give to a bank to close. I guess we would get some sort of technical clearance letter.
Oh, yeah.
At that point, I wonder if that would suffice. I wonder.
I don't know. I know that the Virginia Housing accepted it. I would think that they're probably worked. I don't know. I don't know versus a bank. We've had it run a few tests on it. I haven't had any negative feedback because we were prepared to sort of flip this if we needed to. Yeah. And we would call it conditional approval, administrated this way.
Right.
And haven't had to do that.
Because something like when we submit the bonds and easements, we might not be the owner at that point in time.
Yeah.
So you might be seeing like a future entity in a blank instrument, you know. Maybe just one. A lot of things change.
Like I said, it's just submitted. It's not necessarily finalized at all to get the clearance.
So there's a technical letter is technical clearance letter issued, will it say something like the only thing remaining to do is post your bonds and
yes. Court
your easements?
It'll be bulleted out.
The lender will be happy with that.
Yeah.
Okay. My concern is, and you've seen us do it before, is we race to get a site plan done because you guys are making a major change to the code of some kind, and we want to be grandfathered in, but I'm not ready to post my bonds and things under this scenario. You're going to tell me I got to go back and revise my plan to bring it up to date is what I think I'm hearing.
Nope.
If you keep it active, I would, you know, usually that's grandfathering rules are set up that the active applications stay in.
Yeah.
So if it's just showing diligent pursuit throughout, we can work through that with you.
But it's always, there's two different triggers. One is approval and one is acceptance. Mm-hmm. It's up to the board. They adopt things, which one they adopt. So
that's right. Yeah.
It's that 6 month window in there that bugs me because, I mean, do you really want me to submit something every 6 months just to say I'm keeping it active, or is that something we do with a letter?
I will clarify that with Betsy. I'll see what her thought is on that.
Because I will be happy to make one line revision on a drawing and send it back in.
We've talked about that.
Come find it.
Okay.
That's a good point that you can't get a plan approved and shelf it. You can't basically get a plan approved and shelf it.
Right. Because that's been a problem too, is you know, with respect to validity, we've had plans set out conditionally approved for years and years.
Yeah.
And then what? You know, there's no way to not be the bad guy in that scenario.
Question, Zeb, on the technical clearance for your VDOT entrance permit. Do we have to use the word entrance permit or just be VDOT permit? And where I'm going with this is if there's a road improvement affiliated with it, I guess this would only be a CPAP, so I would still use the old. Okay. I think I just talked myself off the question.
It's actually not an entrance permit anymore. It's a land use permit.
Okay. What I was getting at is more than just I'm building an entrance, I actually have road work to do. And there's a VDOT process to that is post-approval. That's pavement marking signage, MOT, you know, the whole traffic studies.
It's really so you get access to your site. It's not for improvements.
Right. But if it's for the roads, I'm just using the CPAP process already anyways. So this kind of is null.
Yeah. Like even if your site plan had a right turn lane, you're only trying to get that, whatever Fairfax used to call entrance correct, so that VDOT can sign off and you can get your construction vehicles to the site during, so you can get a grading permit.
That's right, Keith.
I know we're short on time, and I'll be quick about this. So can you go back to the previous slide? And the old process was essentially you get your conditional approval, and then there was the environmental permitting side of it. Now you're putting the environmental permitting side in front of your technical clearance letter. So are we saying that your environmental permitting needs to be, such as like a wetlands permit, needs to be approved before you can get your technical clearance letter?
Yes. We're saying no. Yeah, we are.
You are. That's right. You can't go out and grade until you have your permits.
Yeah.
You need your wetland permits. You need your.
So there's no additional review. Like right now, what happens is we get conditional approval, and then you've got other things you're doing to get your grading permit.
But I guess my point is, what if I don't want my grading permit yet? What if I just want my technical clearance letter?
Yeah.
Now I have to go get my wetlands permit to get my technical clearance letter?
I think we communicate with that, and maybe we take that language out of the letter.
Okay.
You know, we're not clearing you for grading, but I think there's flexibility there.
Well, there's a separate grading permit process you still need to follow.
Right.
But I guess my point is, like, I'm trying to get something vested, or I'm trying to get something to an approval, and I'm not ready to go to grading on it yet. Like, I know some jurisdictions require you have to have the wetlands permit, but out and your site plan doesn't need wetlands permit approval to get your site plan.
That's why he's got flexibility in the bar up there so those things can jump around as needed.
We would need to understand what you really need and what we're saying by issuing a technical clearance. We don't want it to not mean something. So I guess, Pete, we just have to talk it through.
It might be something we need to spell out those. Because there's plenty of times where you are most interested in getting an approval. I mean, developers, if they're selling, right?
And this you don't have to do it this way, you know, but just know that this is replacing conditions. So there won't be a conditional approval. If you chose to just go through and get your plan approved and do your thing, that's fine. But we found that most commercial developers want to move faster than that. So it would
kind of say technical clearance provided you can do nothing, but plans approved.
Yeah, I would hate to do that. We would have to talk it through.
But you're saying all the county requirements are met. Like that's a, yeah. Could you submit the grading permit before the environmental permits in,
yes.
in that case? Just
yeah. That would be it's all meant to be concurrent, and that's
I'm looking at the flow. That's why I'm asking the question.
Thank you.
I don't understand why the technical clearance wouldn't be where the conditional approval is. Why would you let somebody submit a grading permit without technical clearance?
Because they were saying you could submit your your site plan and your grading permit application same day. We're going to start the plans review. They're going to start administrative work on the application. Yeah. And then, you know, your environmental permits are due at the same point if you want to get started with grading is what I'm trying to show here.
Yeah.
So, under conditional approval, as a project manager, I didn't worry about the environmental stuff. There was advisory comments there that your VSMP has to be done, wetlands have to be done. I don't care. We're getting conditional approval. Now I'm saying to my PMs, you have to care about them. Make sure these things are in place. Because once they say you're clear technically, ENS is looking at that and saying, okay, you know, we're good to go ahead and just issue the letter.
I think that's where I'm struggling a little bit. It's almost like you can't do any, like Pete said, you wouldn't do any of those things until you were clear technically. Because what if the clearing limit changes or the impacts change? Because you're still working on engineering.
Yeah, I mean, a developer can move as quickly or as slowly through the process as they want. We're trying to give them maximum flexibility and the show them, show everyone what needs to be done in order to work quickly through the.
Can I offer a suggestion and to keep us on schedule? Would you share this
certainly
presentation?
Yeah,
I already committee and maybe. Yeah. If there's suggestions or questions, you know, send them to Laura. This isn't final right now, but it might be worthwhile hearing different perspectives and.
Well, yeah, that's why we wanted to do this.
Okay,
it'd be good to take a project almost too and just like walk through this and see. You know,
we've run. Looks like it. We've run probably half a dozen tests for different things.
Yeah.
And I've had no negative feedback from them. We got through. Applicant got through Virginia Housing with LIHTC funding. Just as a quick example, we had a CPAP that involved dam repairs through DEQ, and they were going to do a standalone grading permit, have the CPAP run on the side. Let's get all together, because if we ever need to understand what happened on this site, it's in one place. So we did a clearance on the phase one piece of that for those repairs, which were permitted through other. All the while, the rest of the plan is still in process and working through the rest of it. So I felt like that was a real good move. As I hate to tell people, no, you can't do safety repairs because the plans aren't quite ready.
So you just said that was a CPAP.
That was a CPAP, yep.
But CPAP's not changing, right?
Generally, no. That was a
infrastructure CPAP, like a road CPAP.
Are we going to draw this to a close also?
Flexibility there to talk through what's the challenge.
You've never heard industry complain about flexibility until we came here.
We're starting.
I just didn't follow
it's
the example very well related to that.
Change is tough.
Is tough. Trying to pull things left. It sounds good.
Thank you.
So, what about a plan that has no buildings, just all grading?
It's a CPAP.
That's that early grading CPAP. It's fun.
Well, there's plenty of stuff that has no buildings.
Or if it's just, is it just a standalone grading plan? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, it could have sidewalks. It could have a playground.
ADA improvements.
It could be a parking lot.
If there's no building or use, it's a CPAP.
It's always a CPAP? If there's no building?
If there's no use.
Yeah, if there's no
subdivision.
Use,
so if you're just doing like a sidewalk,
parking's not a use,
or utilities, or what are you building the parking lot for? There's nothing. No use.
All right.
I actually got that question.
We were trying to do that one.
Well, I'm curious. Anyway, sorry.
I'm curious. Try to move on. If we got time at the end, we can come back to this. How's that? Give you a chance to think about it.
There's nothing inside.
Who's going to tee up the private reserve fund?
Okay, so I want to thank Rick for coming up with some letters, some template letters, and making this more formal based on our last discussion, and want to go through these a little bit and see if committee members had comments. I have some comments from BND staff here too that I want to discuss if possible. So, okay, so essentially this starts with, they all start with a reference to the zoning ordinance and what the requirement states. This first letter that I have up is the HOA one. So there's established HOA, or I guess you're annexing into an HOA. And this one, we're all kind of familiar with the process where there's a reserve study requirement in the Virginia code that the reserve study be conducted once every 5 years, and that the HOA board accounts for the reserve study in their budgeting. So that's what these bullets are saying. And then this is going on to say, as a developer of the subject property, we will ensure that a qualified reserve study for private roads is completed during the declarant control period and provided to the HOA. And then it says, and that the HOA will incorporate, the study's findings into its annual budget and financial planning to ensure adequate funding. So a couple things. One is that, and I want to pull up some more comments, but one is that this HOA will incorporate the findings. I have a question about that because I don't know if you're the declarant. I mean, you can, if you're under declarant control, you can say that, but you can't say forever. I will ensure forever. It's the wording. I'm tripping over the wording a little bit.
I mean, that's the struggle of this whole thing, right?
Yeah.
You got different parties involved or potentially different parties. You start off one way, it's going to transition at some point, likely within the 10 years. And, you know, I struggle with all these because at the end of the day, I mean, as this entire thing has been, it's a struggle, right? Like, is it at the end of the day, are any of these really going to do anything other than you're getting the signature and you're just pushing it along in the paper process? I mean, outside of that, there's nothing really binding. There's nothing that was a struggle with all these.
I didn't know if there was a way to fix that.
What if you said, as the blah, 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 provided to the HOA, so that the HOA may incorporate the study's findings, blah, 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 and admitting that you've given them what they need, but you're not promising that you can.
See, you probably just want to focus on the declarant or the developer, because once it gives over to the HOA, the state will kick in, right? And the state requirements.
Okay, so there was a comment that I missed that says HOA is aware that they must incorporate, or so that. Like Elizabeth is saying.
So the declarant is doing everything they can to make sure the HOA is informed and has all the information they need.
It's going back.
I mean, do we even really need to put that?
That is aware.
The state code says they have to do it anyways, right?
Yeah.
Well, I think we wanted to like have them sign. And we have, don't we have the HOA president signing this? The applicant name, we have an HOA acknowledgement, if applicable. So it's not just aimed at the applicant now. There's like this president of the HOA signing this. So so we could say so, or we could go back to.
I mean, I like Elizabeth's comment, you know, such that the HOA can or may incorporate the findings. I mean, it's.
HOA is aware. Betsy, you're online. Can you hear us?
I can.
I know you had made this particular suggestion about this text. The HOA is aware that they must incorporate.
So, you know, I think that state law says they must. So I think keeping must, but holding the original developer accountable how do you do that? Like everybody said, I agree with the comment. We can't make the developer swear that the HOA in 20 years is going to still do that. That was sort of how the May language concerns me a little bit, because they are obligated to do it. And the purpose of this appears to be to let them remind them if they didn't already know.
I like the idea of that.
Say it again.
I think she's going down the right path about you're just
ensuring the HOA will know.
Are we okay with the language Betsy suggested, which is, and that the HOA is aware that they must incorporate the study's findings?
Who suggested that language?
Betsy suggested that language. I pulled up a document.
Okay.
And that's what they're signing here, that they're aware.
Back to commercial.
Because now you have the HOA signing. So.
And does this help me out? I understand how that works when you're trying to go to an established HOA. If there isn't an HOA, or will there always be an HOA?
We have a separate letter for no HOA
that
we'll talk about. So this is either you're in an HOA or annexing into an HOA, and we're thinking you could get the HOA president to sign. So the applicant and the HOA. We think it works for both scenarios. And the other thing I wanted to bring up really quick, and I want to, Betsy, I have to go through your comments. I didn't print that one, so I'm about to look at that on screen.
It's fine.
It's my mistake. I apologize. But the one of the questions I know at the end is, I know last time we talked about providing some specific examples, and Keith submitted a comment, which was helpful, saying, do we really want to do that? It's kind of limiting. I tried to put including but not limited to not sort of give an out to someone that, oh, but that wasn't in the list. So are the examples helpful or are the examples harmful, I think is the current question for the group.
Do we need it?
Say again?
Do we need it?
We talked about doing it last time so that people knew what maintenance was. And maybe this isn't as important for an HOA, but maybe as we go into the next ones, what are the expectations? Like, what are we specifically talking? We thought it was a good idea in the last meeting when we talked about it. And I pulled these from the reserve studies that Angela and Derek gave me. So I did pull them from somewhere that was kind of legitimate. I know it doesn't include everything. I guess we thought it was helpful, but I don't know. Do we want to rethink that?
It was all about the component of the maintenance.
Yeah, maintenance and repairs, yeah.
Adding that verbiage makes it better because you only have a few things there. And I'm okay with modifying it by the way you've changed it.
The including but not limited to? Yeah. Okay. Everybody else?
And the idea is this is just an example.
Yeah.
Right? Like a developer could submit something totally custom.
That's true. Zeb keeps reminding me of that. This is a template letter, but you can customize this. This is just to give a flavor of what it is. And then I want to go back into, because I think I skipped over. Maybe not. Maybe I didn't skip over. That's the must thing. And that's it. Yep.
Just one question. Sorry.
Yeah.
So we're saying that developer's going to say they're doing the first study in essence. So
let me go back up. Yeah, let me go back up here.
If they're in declared control.
Right. In this letter. And
reserve study. Here. I'm sorry. As a developer, we will ensure the reserve study.
And the HOA is must record the study's findings. But in point of fact, they'll start with this study, but they're under obligation to do. This won't last them the 20 years or whatever. They're going to need to do, and in fact, their acknowledgement says they're going to have to do studies. I don't know if you need
instead to. Instead of the study, just more general, we'll incorporate reserve study findings. A more general statement, because it's not just one.
It's not just this one that you're going to hand to them, but they're going to have to pick it up and do their own once they're in control. And in fact, that's what the acknowledgement says.
Wait a minute. Reserve study findings. Does that fix it?
Yeah.
Reserve study findings. Okay. And then I think there was one more comment over here on that. Should we put a footnote that this is for projects for which HOA already exists? So That's a very good question. We actually, this letter is for ones that have an HOA. It's right here. It's not very clear, Betsy, probably, but it just says private road reserve fund. This is the HOA letter. Maybe we could say existing HOA. Well,
or I think they're just talking about the applicable, right? It's not applicable if it's just the declarant, right? So that's more of an annex that the second signature. Was that comment geared for that second signature?
It was the second signature, yes.
Yeah, I envision that not being signed if it was fresh out of the ground
development.
So instead of if applicable, maybe we could elaborate.
Yeah, like you guys do this, you've done this before, like where there's like an instructions piece that says, because it's a template, right?
Yeah.
So what Betsy's saying is add information, like you were saying something about get this signed if, or not needed if, whatever.
Or there's two separate letters, though, I thought.
Right. There's going to be cases where the HOA doesn't exist or it is the declarant. And so why are you going to ask the declarant to sign twice? And, you know, that may be something that on one of the letters, we don't have the if applicable because it's always applicable. And on the other ones, maybe there isn't if applicable if there's a chance that it wouldn't be.
Maybe we can do if HOA is already established. I'm trying to get it in one letter because we have three letters. I don't want to make a fourth one.
Why don't just delete that signature block from the fresh one? Just signing, the applicant's just signing. Just delete that and then have that on the second one, which is if you have an HOA.
So four letters.
So we want four letters.
Three letters.
Well, we have one for no HOA and one for commercial.
One for no HOA is the fresh one. The first one was just like that, right?
This one assumes there is an HOA.
Right, the first one I'm saying.
Yeah.
The first letter, why don't you just delete this acknowledgement in the first letter?
I think we only want this bottom piece if there is an HOA already established. So I think we could just say that. Because you would just wouldn't do this. Hold on to that thought. Let's go on to the other two. I'm trying to keep the number of templates down, and if it's just this one minor thing, I'm not sure it's worth a separate template, but we can. I'm worried about it a little bit because there's one that has to do with.
You said didn't the first letter have this? Well, maybe I'm thinking it wrong. I thought the first letter had.
This is the very first. We haven't gone to the second letter. Okay. You know what I did? I jumped to Betsy's comments and I confused you. Okay. That was on me because I jumped over to grab a sentence.
Yeah.
That one. Yeah.
I thought, okay.
So you've seen two, but it's.
Okay.
The same. So I apologize for that. Okay, so let me save that one. So let's jump ahead because I know we don't have a ton of time. This one is.
Sorry, just one quick question. Up at the top, you say for developments where private roads are maintained by HOA, confirm compliance with Virginia Code, blah, blah. Do we need the bullets? Because what if that code changes? Like there's something different.
I think there was a desire
just that the person signing knew what they were signing as opposed to the, I think that was the intent of the
example. Yeah, it's just like we're referencing a code and then we're restating the code. So if the code changes, then we gotta change this. That's all.
That's what it should be.
Betsy, what do you think?
I'm indifferent, but if we include it, I think it should be in bullets rather than paragraph form so you can really see it. But if the group feels like just a reference to the code is all that's needed, then
it would eliminate potential work down the line if the code changes.
And is the goal that this is template that is only used for 12 months anyways?
True.
Until we change the zoning code?
True.
I think it'll force us to look at the letter too, because you know how these templates get done and then they don't make sense in a year or two. We leave the language and we have to check up on it regularly. But again, I'm indifferent.
So you guys did such a great job recently of consolidating all the different bond forms together and you just check the box as you go. Why wouldn't you consider doing this as an affidavit and you have all these options in there and whoever's signing the affidavit just checks the box that are applicable?
It's a great idea.
I can work on that. That's all I can say. We can work on that. I think it gets hard, but we can work on that. I think the reason it gets a little hard is these other scenarios. So if we look at the one that is, I have a private road maintenance agreement, so I'm not going to have some of these requirements. I think where we struggled was with this paragraph, because if I don't have an HOA, I don't have to do a reserve study.
Other than with the well.
So okay. I don't know how to. We need to discuss that, because how are we going to make sure that they consider the maintenance and the necessary budgeting? You know, there are some things that need to be considered, but not these exact things, right? Five lot owners sharing maintenance of a road are not going to have to do the state code.
Do you require them to submit that to the county attorney, that maintenance agreement?
Yeah, we do, right? Maintenance agreement goes to the county attorney's office. So I think I would delete this little chunk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just delete that paragraph.
Right? Just that whole thing?
Or at least the part after. Like, do you still need for development where private roads are under private road maintenance agreement, and then everything else after? Do you have to keep that first sentence?
I wonder if. I don't know, because if you read it, it says we're going to record a maintenance agreement down here. So I feel like it can be deleted, because it goes right into, there's the requirement. Like, let's pretend I delete it. Let's just see what it looks like.
She's telling you, though, that this is specifically for that.
I think it's okay to say, as a developer, we recorded or record a private road maintenance agreement. And that's up here, and that it says this is the one for the private road maintenance agreement.
That one sentence kind of makes it clear that that's
right. How are you determining the value?
Yeah. I think we're trying to tell them how.
No, these are just internal payments.
Yeah. You have it in the next paragraph, right?
I feel like I do, but I mean, that identifies responsibility to provide and fund. It doesn't say how. It doesn't say how they can hire someone to do a reserve study, or they could.
Do we have to tell them how to?
So that's what I'm thinking we can just go into, but you're saying you guys like this.
Well, it kind of makes it clear that that's specific.
Under maintenance agreement? I don't know.
In the signature page, you have, as managing agent, I hereby acknowledge the responsibility to conduct reserve studies and maintain adequate reserves.
You see, I don't think you can say that either. Mm-hmm. Because they don't have to do reserve studies. Oh, if there's a managing agent, they don't have to do it. Again, they don't have to do it. You can hire a managing agent, but you don't have to do this.
Do they have to maintain adequate reserves? The second piece?
It just goes back to the irrelevance of this whole thing. If it's going to be on a plat anyway, who's responsible for maintenance? So.
I don't know, I'm struggling to make the connection between this and this. For developments where private roads are under private road maintenance agreement, as a developer, we have recorded. Maybe it's just a.
It's redundant to everything they're already doing.
Why isn't it as a developer of the subject property?
But isn't that the whole purpose of this? Is to get right, right? We're using this for an acknowledgement from the developer that they are or will do all of these things, rather than requiring them to do it before it's reasonable to do it. Isn't that the whole purpose of this letter? Taking right. A giant step back. It's just for them to acknowledge that it's too early, but we will do it.
That's right.
But this is not a reserve study one, because this is like five property owners, no HOA. So we can't put the reserve study stuff in, which is why we struck that.
Right. And that was one of the questions I asked. There's no if there is no HOA, state law doesn't apply. But it is, again, making sure that the developer does what he has to do to set up the property owners and to include in this recorded document the necessary pieces to protect the home. I mean, that's what we're trying to get out of this, I think.
Maybe if we turn it into an affidavit, we could leave that.
Why, Laura, is as the developer of the subject property under a private road maintenance agreement.
You want to say it again?
Flipping that. It says that in that sentence.
I know, but I'm thinking it goes way on the second part. No comma after property. The developer of the subject property under a private road maintenance agreement that will or has recorded, whatever, we'll come back to that. Identifies the response, so then it goes away, and the next word is identifies.
The aforementioned agreement? I'm going to pull my inner Jason. It's just agreement.
I think we're saying the same thing, just rearranging the words.
They just like that it's clear this is the letter for the private road. They just want that, like...
Yeah, however you want to word that, it's fine, yeah.
They just want it in the very first sentence. It's like the lead. This is the private road maintenance agreement clause. Right. And then the other thing is, do we need to say that the owners, it says all affected lot owners, should we be saying the owners of all lots served by the private road instead of affected? Should we clarify? I don't know who's going to sign that unless we get all the lot owners to sign it. I don't know how to do that. I don't know what to do. Is the applicant signing this? I mean, I guess they can say.
At this point, if you don't have an HOA, you haven't necessarily sold these lots, right? So you don't know who the lot owners are going to be.
You could say they will be made aware.
Isn't that what it says?
Are or will be made aware. So there's
nobody. Are or will be made aware.
Right, but there's nobody.
Okay, so it's okay. Yes, Betsy, okay. Are you okay with it now that we've talked that one out? And then I think you wanted, instead of in the future, perpetuity. Betsy, I think you had suggested.
Yeah, and that's only to ensure that they understand that, you know, it's identified elsewhere, but just to make sure, again, how many times can we knock them over the head with the county and nobody else is going to be responsible for maintaining this roadway? You got it forever.
It's not in the
Thank you. And then I think that was it for this letter, and I'm trying to stay on time. I really am, and get to the commercial one. Is that okay? Can we, or is everybody okay if we move on?
You have to remove that stuff from the signature.
Oh, shoot. As the managing.
Just delete it.
The responsibility to repair and maintain, maybe.
Who's the managing agent?
Yeah.
Versus like the applicant. Why does that person have to sign?
I don't think that's appropriate. Needed. The whole thing.
Okay. Let's go to commercial real quick, guys. Here's the commercial property one. I think we have that same concern about commercial properties not having due reserve studies. And so I think we would take out the middle again.
This should just be a copy of the last one, but just change the first sentence. Right? Yeah. It'd be exactly the same, but that first sentence would just say.
Well, the only my only question about exactly the same is, are the commercial associations under the same state?
No.
No, so we didn't include the state. Okay, never mind.
I think you can. Then copy and paste the other one, Laura.
I think it's actually okay because this is talking about commercial property. But you think it should be the other? Okay.
Well, that's fine. Yeah, as long as the rest of it captured the changes.
You know what I mean? Because it does start with I'm a commercial property, whereas the other one was lacking the I'm a private road. That's good. Like this one's better.
Did you? Yeah, as long as you didn't make any other changes, Dad, I think you got it.
In perpetuity was one change.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
I'm trying to look at all our comments.
The managing
agent. Oh, the question is, how would the future owners be made aware, not just the first owners?
I defer to Jason on in perpetuity. That's forever, even if the thing evaporates.
As long as it exists.
It's okay in the future. I mean, it's future covers as long as it exists. In perpetuity means you're going to have a responsibility forever, whether that road is there or not.
Jason, help. Are you reading this?
I think it's a weird phrase. That's all.
He's going to review this. So
okay. He's going to review it.
So what about our burden to notify future owners? This is as the owner and property manager of the subject commercial property.
Well, there, by then there'll be a recorded private road maintenance agreement that runs with the land, right?
Okay, that's fair.
This whole thing started off with a 10-year reserve, or not reserve, but a 10-year reserve.
Yeah, fund.
Now we're talking about in perpetuity.
Yeah.
So I think it's blown up more than what it was.
I'm not sure you need any of this.
Can you just delete? Yeah, just delete that.
Just stop.
Which maintained one? And repaired, period.
Yes.
Yep. Thank you. Okay, and I'm going to go back and do that. I know I can do that later, but. And then does that go for the HOA one also? It's a little different.
It's the same.
It doesn't say in perpetuity, though.
It doesn't say future.
Nope. No. There's no future in the HOA.
Do you also get rid of the managing agent signature
page for the commercial? Okay. I probably didn't. I did not. Thank you. Okay. But the thought is, how do we feel now about the affidavit question versus it's okay to have the letters? Are they different enough that the letters are helpful? Would it be better to have them all than one and you check the box? Help me.
You want to get this done?
So go with the letters and move on.
Yeah.
Can you live with that, David? You can make it an affidavit. Is that what, that's what you would say? It could be, he could make it into, or does it have to be a letter? What did we discuss with zoning?
I think they were expecting letters.
Okay.
Just a quick.
I mean, if this is incorporated in my declaration that this kind of stuff has to be done anyway, then do I even need a letter if it's already in my declaration that Jason has to approve before I can record it?
That's where we're heading in the long-term solution. We're just not there yet. So that's the ultimate. This is a little interim stopping place. So we get to there, right?
That's right.
Stopgap measure.
Yeah. So. To meet the current ordinance, this is where we're at, trying to get back to something different.
Lord, can we go back to the non-HOA? I just take another shot at what I was trying to get at, because I think what you finished with didn't make a lot of sense. So that just first sentence, as the developer under a private road maintenance agreement, we have recorded or will record a private road maintenance agreement that identifies the responsibility. Blah, 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 blah.
Got it. Whoops.
No whoops.
Because we don't need a forementioned. That was totally okay. We didn't need to show them. That's what you were hoping for?
Nope. Yeah, as a developer. Such a property.
Or we record that identifies.
We have recorded or record.
And yeah. Shout out to Keith here too, because he said or will record because it may not have already been recorded.
There's no such thing as construction plan and profiles full approval. Just approval.
Is that the right timing for that agreement prior to CCAP?
It has to be.
Full construction plan and profiles approval. Just approval, right? It's not a conditional final step.
Right. Well,
our clearance letter
time is best.
The HOA docs don't get recorded till plat. That's what I'm asking.
Yeah.
Does this agreement have to get recorded prior to CCAP?
It says, what's the language saying?
First record plat, first site plan, or first record plat?
Which is why I think the language in this had the, you know, will, not did, because the whole reason for this is that we can't. We're trying to change the order of things, I think, from what the zoning ordinance requires.
I still think full construction plan approval is not right, based upon the zoning ordinance.
You should say site plan approval or record plat, like the typical proffer text.
Do you need a zoning ordinance again, Laura?
That's what it says. It says site plan or record plat. Site plan or record plat approval. Oh, it's up there. It's right there. Initial, sorry. Initial record plat or site plan.
Yeah, would it just match that? Yep.
Backwards. So. Yeah.
Plan. I can't see. Okay, I misworked that.
You're missing a noun, though. We're now at, we have recorded that identifies.
Or will record. Yeah.
Something that identifies.
Identifying?
We had a aforementioned agreement.
Is it identifying the responsibility? Not that identifies.
Identify. I'm catching up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good job, guys.
Well, that's still not right.
Yeah.
If you skip over the in the commas and read it as we have recorded identifying the responsibility. We've recorded.
No, there's a comma in there. So skip all that stuff about where we order.
What?
Maybe I can take this
out,
one out.
Do you take out under? He says, as a developer. Oh.
Why are we
did it? We did that for the thing up above.
Put it in ChatGPT and ask him how to spell it.
Recycled everything in that
sentence. I thought we were providing the reserve study.
I think you still need to say you've recorded a private maintenance agreement.
And in this case, there is no reserve study. Requirement.
I'm going back to the aforesaid and I'll let Jason figure it out.
He's on the call.
He's going to get something. He's actually going to go to him so he can contemplate. But I think I'm sure Jason will fix it. I have full confidence. I do think we have time for the last thing.
This isn't going to be published in the FSM anyway. So.
No, it's fine. And it's a sample. Seth keeps running. It's a sample. It's a sample.
And every applicant
as people revise these, who's going to be reviewing them? B&D? Letter? Zoning?
The county attorney.
Can B&D please review and sign it? My request.
I think we would just do a quick check that
it's there.
It's what we've asked for. And
it's the intent.
All right, we got to move on. We got 20 minutes. What is happening with gated communities?
So an issue came up and we were asked as staff to look into it and possibly developing FSM standards. Montebello Farms is the example that was provided. The issue is Montebello Farms has two gated entrances. This particular gated entrance at Potomac View Road and Big Rock Drive. What we were told is that there's actually a gate here. I'll show you as I scroll down. But what was happening was cars were queuing and backing into the right turn lane on Potomac View Road. So as they're waiting at the gate for the gate to lift, they're queuing. And so you can kind of see the gate set up here. There's two lanes coming in, one lane going out, two gates. And just to kind of fill you in on this really quick, we looked at the site plan. It shows the gate and stacking configuration. It's two lane, two gate entrance that can hold eight vehicles prior to having to stack back out in the turn lane on Potomac View Road. So this is the plan. In terms of the site itself, the site tabulation, we're talking about 406 units, 195 were single family detached, 111 single family attached, and 100 multifamily. So that's the scope of this particular project. So in doing our research, I know you all know this because you know the FSM, but there's nothing about this in the FSM currently. We did talk a lot about stacking and this zoning ordinance rewrite for drive-through facilities. And basically the FSM just talked about the length of the stacking space of 18 feet. Never specified how many stacking spaces were required based on any kind of uses, drive-through restaurants, banks, whatever. It was basically, we discussed it. The design engineer would determine how many stacking spaces were needed based on the proposed use. That's just the existing text. I will send this to you all after the meeting. So then we looked at VDOT. So this is where it gets a little bit interesting. So what does VDOT have in place for this? We looked in the road design manual and appendix F, and there's something called corner clearance. So they can, at the discretion of the VDOT reviewer designer, they can apply corner clearance requirements to connections to entrances or private roads intersecting with the VDOT roadway, as in this case. And so what their options are, they have a couple options. If the access point or private road operates like a street or intersection, or if it's signalized, and the connection could possibly impact the operation of the public roadway. There could be an issue. Then they have the right to look at the operational character of that turning movement onto the side street and the queues, and you know, try to determine how far to place the closest side street from the intersection. It's not an exact match, okay? It's not an exact match. Here we have a major street, we have a turning movement, and we have a side street. And the issue is, will this impact the major street? It's not, again, it's not an exact match. It's all we could find. It's the closest we could find to what we were trying to research. In this case, if you had a 225-foot minimum, you divided by our queue length of 18 feet, that gives you 12 and a half cars. So if you all just said, make it 225 feet, it will work for everything forevermore, then that's what we could do. A couple things that make this project maybe somewhat unique is that the gates on Big Rock Drive, and I presume the other gate, were not factored into the traffic study conducted for this at the legislative application. So, and also, VDOT did not invoke the corner clearance criteria in their comments on the site plan. Could they have? I don't know, but they did not. So where does that leave us?
Requiring a queuing study. Anybody wants to gate a community, just they got to provide you a queuing study.
So what we did was we looked at Prince William County. They didn't go that far. Basically, the question was, should we develop standards for queuing at the gates and also maybe a turnaround? You know how you pull in and you're like, whoops, I didn't know this was gated. I'm out of here and there's no turnaround in this particular scenario. You're not turning around.
So in this particular case, there was some type of a queuing study, not exactly sure. There was a traffic study, and it identified like 5 vehicles an hour. I mean, it was a very, very low number of vehicles using this point of access. So without standards defining what that queuing needs to look like and what we want in the study, I don't think that solves the problem. So I just need to be careful of that.
I looked at something like River Creek, and I don't think I've ever seen a backup out on the Battlefield Parkway.
I mean, this kid, if the study says there's only 5 vehicles per hour, I mean, that's the data we're going to have to look at for the analysis.
Well, not everybody's going to have a traffic study.
My point is that may not be the only piece of information that's important to the decision point on what needs to be included. Do you need a bypass? The reason River Creek never does, if you think about it, there's a way around all that. There's a gatehouse. What happens if there is or there isn't a gatehouse, right? If there's somebody there to monitor it, the gate fails. If there's no gatehouse, is there a bypass needed? Those kind of discussions, I think, are what we're hoping to consider in all of this.
Yeah, because you could get queued up if, I don't know, where's my access card? Now they're holding up the line while they're searching.
Yeah.
And again, if there's somebody there, there's a solution. But a lot of these smaller gated communities may or may not even have, this particular one did not have, it's not manned. It's purely mechanical.
Has DTCI chimed in on their recommendations?
We haven't spoken to them specific about any language. We just want to introduce this to you all and show you what Prince William had, which is quite vague. I mean, it just sort of leaves it up to discussion.
But yes, DTCI will be involved in this discussion.
Oh, yeah, I love it.
probably fire marshal too, a little bit different issues because it's just the gate, but we want to make sure we don't do anything that messes up their requirements.
I've gotten comments from DTCI on a lot of water applications that have applications that have gates, and it's totally infeasible to have queuing lengths of stuff to first facility that, you know, if it gets visited once a month on small little eased areas, small facilities that have a gate that they're asking for turnarounds and bypass and queuing, and it's just like, it's ridiculous.
All the more reason to have some form of criteria.
Yep. And Susan is backing up into the right turn lane.
Yeah.
But if the right turn lane only goes to this gate, why do we care if the right turn lane gets filled?
Really, there's not really a right turn lane.
Backing up
in the road.
Road.
Turn lane wasn't warranted.
Is that a VDOT road?
Yes.
Yeah, the turn lane wasn't warranted, so it's not a turn lane. It's a taper, and it like holds one or two cars. And I think it was causing one to back up into the main lane, and two to cause confusion for people who were slowing because they were seeing cars. Again, this is one example that triggered the need to have this discussion by a board member. I would not use this as the gospel of the problem.
So they could just move the gate.
We looked at everything, but there were some slope issues and there were some problems. I mean, they'd be stopping like this.
Tree save.
Instead of like this. we looked at everything.
Just a good exhibit when establishing a criteria for that throat length.
Yeah.
And just putting in an exhibit would be good.
So I don't know. I mean, this is just an introduction. This is just to get you guys thinking about it. Betsy, you have no objection to me sending these documents to committee, do you? So they can kind of read through it at their leisure.
A thought out. Okay. Betsy, are you thinking it would seem like we might want to have feedback on minimum distance from the intersection based on ADT? I mean, if we've got 10,000 vehicles a day, we maybe want to have more. If it's 100 vehicles per day,
I absolutely think you have to look at the road that you're coming off of. The criteria needs to, you know, whatever it is, the road you're coming off of, it's traffic counts. The configuration of the intersection is, are there escape routes? The configuration, is it gated? Is there a bypass lane? Is there two gates, one for residents and one for guests? How many residents in the, homes in the community? Is it a opportunity for people to be confused? And I don't know how you regulate that, but topography, distance, all of those things.
This kind of goes into like the traffic data and the traffic study, not so much of like it's case by case, and it depends on how good the traffic study is. So
you don't
like,
always have a traffic study.
Right.
In fact, more often we won't.
I don't think we have any really good stacking criteria for anything we really do. So yeah, that's why DTCI has to be involved in the discussions, because if there is a traffic study, they're the ones who receive it and review it.
Are there any standards? Does anybody know any standards that exist for that?
I looked in other jurisdictions and
maybe we can ask Grove Slate or somebody and see if we can ask them to say, is there a national standard for stacking at a gate?
Weren't they the ones that did the study? This one.
I don't know. That's the other one.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of what we need is feedback from you all about how best to.
We can ask around.
I mean, honestly, that's kind of what we're looking for.
We just made an exhibit. Here's the typical, and then like Kevin says, if your ADT is this, you times it by 10% or whatever, and you get the stacking lane. And maybe there's a criteria for that.
I mean, it'd be great if there is. Yeah. But we just. I don't know. I feel like Prince Williams left it deliberately generic. I don't know why. I haven't spoken to anybody there. I don't know if anybody's done gates in Prince William, but it's quite generic.
And you don't have anything for Fairfax County?
I couldn't find anything. Doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It just means I couldn't find it.
I mean, I feel like the cities would probably be a good.
Maybe the city
expensive up there, cities, ones that have
people that want to keep other people out.
Which one?
So this is something that we're looking to address.
McLean has a perfect one, the farm one. It's right off Chambers Road. They have a gate 10 feet from the...
I mean, there's gated communities everywhere, just as our standard.
Yeah, even the parking garages that are,
The one I'm most familiar with.
Parking garages with gates.
Yeah,
those operate pretty good.
A lot of the wineries in Western Loudoun have gates.
Yeah. Every data center has a gate.
Yeah. Well, they don't have the traffic.
How many visitors are you getting?
Create the problem.
I'm just saying. They got gates. I don't know.
Well, that's a question, too, that Pete mentioned in our coordination meeting. Is it residential? Is it commercial? Is it everything? Is it...
And when you guys do data centers, do you just put the gate like at the front? Do you think about it at all? Like, is there
no thought?
I mean, are you like measuring a distance back?
I've seen our rezonings for data centers. They ask for queuing analysis as part of the legislative process.
They do. Okay. They don't treat it as
recently.
I've seen.
You're gonna exchange.
Because
what are you you measuring back a distance from the right of way? Like, how did you determine where the gates are? Commercial property owners. It's an incentive for us to make sure we can get all our people in functionally and off the site and off the road.
How did you determine that?
I imagine most of the directions I've worked for, they've got standards for where it goes and it gets reviewed. And they tell you to move it back or move it in. And
I mean, maybe it's not publicly accessible, but if we know someone in another county that has to deal with those.
I mean,
complexes.
Chris Williams says their transportation director determines whether it's adequate or not. So let's reach out and see what criteria do they use.
I feel like going closer to the city. Verify's kind of set a staple for like a lot of things. Like they were kind of like the poster child to emulate with a lot of regulations. So. Not trying to, and Betsy can speak a little bit more to that, but a lot of regulations were done to mimic Fairfax.
So Betsy, what we're hearing, Megan's suggesting maybe you could check with your comrades in Fairfax.
I can find out if they have any standards for gated communities from the transportation and or LDS team.
And I don't mind reaching out to Prince William. I just don't want to step on DTCI's toes.
So I got to
let them know I'm doing it.
Some things.
Don't know what.
I don't know if it was the only entrance or there were other entrances.
So this is a future project we're supposed to work on. Try to get some language together.
It sounds like it was good. It wasn't a good study.
Their environmental regulations.
That's all I have.
Zoning is where it's an hour.
It seems like there should have been a right turn lane, probably. Actually, it used to be just a decent lane.
Last time we engaged traffic.
It seems a little bit odd.
Or invite them to our meeting.
That looks like a pretty major entrance. The one at the gate.
I'm just saying, I don't know that anybody here has an immediate specific recommendation, and I think we need to get outside. You said.
I can ask
Bruce Slade, Wells, whatever.
I mean, these guys can ask
both
firms,
and get them to.
Anybody have any overarching hell no, can't do that comments before we start digging into the Grove Slades and the Fairfaxes and maybe like the city of Richmond or?
As long as you don't attach a 10-year maintenance requirement, I think we'd be all right.
10-year salary for a gate attendant.
Yeah.
I feel like
we'll get tied up with that.
Weren't the consultants we had come in from Grove Slade and Wells? Can't remember. Yeah. The two we had.
Yeah. We did.
They, I'm sure they would.
For the traffic stuff.
They would be willing to come back, I would think.
You're going to send that information out.
I'm going to definitely send it to everybody so you can read through it. It's just very.
They typically just represent. Private. So like when they do these things, they're pretty much private traffic studies.
But we're asking if there's national standards.
They would know. I mean, they're not heavily involved.
VDOT would know too.
VDOT doesn't use Grove Slade and Wells. I mean,
it does their own stuff.
And VDOT.
Right. And they contest Grove Slade and Wells traffic studies.
And they don't allow gated communities on public roads.
I understand that, but they control the entrance, public. The commercial entrance tie-in onto their public road.
Yeah, right.
But they don't because they don't go beyond, on a private road, it's like a commercial entrance. They don't go beyond 100 feet or something like that. It, to them, a private road is dead to them. That's basically what they told us.
Yeah, I'm specifically talking about the impact to the public road.
Yeah. Like, but they don't. They don't. A different
perspective for people who do VDOT traffic studies versus private traffic studies, because probably trying to justify the entrance, whereas on the other side, they look at the impact to the public.
The person reviewing the plan probably could have said, show me the impact onto the road.
Yep.
It looked like that based on the provisions we found, but they did it.
So it just sounds like someone who has that more experience in those types of specific catered items, like a traffic engineer, it would be helpful for our discussion, I think.
So if you want to have a gated community, you need to have a gatehouse with a guard. Done.
Okay, open the gate when it gets bad. come on there.
Everybody up. Not you.
Alert. I don't know. It's an interesting one.
The other thing I'd add to this, River Creek, I have been there when they're doing like a wedding and that big. And if you do it just based on residences, you may lose some sense of you can.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
It becomes an event center, and then the traffic is very different.
Then you add a phase, you got to redo it. Then you add a phase, 100 more houses in the back, redo your queuing. A mile away.
Yeah, got to move your gate.
It's a good one.
I'd really be curious to see how many times has Prince William had to make some determination. I don't, you know.
Well, I mean, there's like they were saying the data center sites all have gates, like somebody reviewing a standard or just saying it, you know, using their judgment or.
But isn't that significantly less traffic in than?
Yeah,
it is. Yeah, but how did you determine the location though? Was there a criteria?
But again, like.
Or you're just using your judgment at this
50
so low.
Versus 500 vehicles at peak hour. I feel like that makes a little bit of a difference.
Sure. Yeah.
It's like the fast food restaurants. They know their business. They know their stacking.
So they're the ones dictating where it should go.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah.
They'll have a standard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
But is that true for residential developers? Do you have a standard?
Well,
if I have a gated community,
I can see if one exists. Yeah.
My queuing. Always this.
We don't know our business as well.
What's your drive-through queue? For residential, yeah.
Depends what type of families move into their neighborhood. I mean, you don't know.
Well, public safety, we do that, so.
Yeah, no, I think it's a reasonable thing. I just don't know that we have an answer today that. Has any basis.
But I guess what we're looking for is this is something reasonable to work on and add to the FSM. This is a problem we're solving, just reaction.
Well, weren't we told by the board that we need to take a look at it?
Yeah, but you don't always agree just because
we're told. I don't think I want to go there.
Okay. We agree. We agree we want to work on it.
Yeah, is it just a one-off? Or is this like happening?
This was the situation that was given to us, that was brought to our attention. And the question was, do we have standards?
And the answer is no. And we could evaluate it and provide some feedback. Yeah, you know, we don't think it's a significant issue.
Are more developments coming down the line? Is it a growing thing?
Zeb, how many gates do you see?
I've never seen this complaint.
But I mean, are there more developments coming along that want to put in gates than in the past?
Hard to predict.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. You know, we've got a lot of new residential things coming in with, I wouldn't think many AHU developments are going to have gates. I would think no.
That site.
You can't even do golf courses in floodplain now, so you're not getting any more of those.
Yeah. So. Struck a nerve.
But there would be like,
but those are the ones with gates.
Gates.
Yeah.
They don't seem to have a problem though.
Yeah.
So. Seems like they're more for master plan communities, communities where they can fund that and like have a person that's, you know.
So the one advantage to gates.
Far between these days.
Yeah, what is the advantage?
One advantage to gates is cutting through on cut through traffic. So if you're concerned, if you're doing a legislative application and you're the concern is brought to you as the applicant, we don't want to cut through traffic. You go, I'll put in a gate.
Is that what this was?
Most of these are dead-end communities.
I mean, in this particular case, that was one of the considerations. I can't say for sure that's why the gates were...
Was a proffered gate?
I don't know that the gates were proffered, but I do know that there was discussion of cut-through traffic in this area, and it makes sense that if you put a gate in, you would alleviate that potential concern.
I don't think that it was proffered. I don't think it was required. I don't think they even showed it. Zeb, correct me if I'm wrong, clearly originally on the site plan. It was kind of an afterthought almost by the developer, I think, in the sale of units.
They talked about it in the legislative. And there was some kind of proffer, but I don't know what it said. It might have said, we will endeavor to prevent cut. It could be something that generic.
So what is the action item here? What's the next step?
I think the next step is sort of to get feedback from you all. We can do some more legwork. We'd like to draft language for this. We'd like to proceed to the next step and add standards to the FSM to address this, because that's what we've been asked to do.
Well, that's what I just asked earlier. Were we asked to develop a standard? And you said we were asked to provide feedback. Which was it?
My understanding is that they wanted us to work up a standard.
Unless for some reason the committee felt that this was not necessary. Like, if you want to make the case that this never happens, this has happened once in the last 30 years, it's not worth writing a standard for. You'd have to provide some kind of feedback that this is generally addressed by the engineer, or we would need you to say something. Like, this doesn't require a government standard because... It's kind of like the discussion of the drive-throughs. You know, we said, let's do queuing. Let's say 5 cars, let's say 6 cars. And you all said, they know their business. They know how many in the queue, just give the length. We're just saying, you know, we're not the experts. We want to know, do you agree that we need a standard? I mean, we could come back and say, we talked to the PRC and they don't think a standard's necessary for these reasons.
What road is this?
Right near the Costco.
So it's up there in that rickety section of the Potomac.
It's like behind the Costco. You're driving that back area.
In that rickety section.
There's a church at the top of the hill.
Let me pull it up.
That's exactly why they got a gate.
That road has also been like
bored to
development down the street.
Is that
patchwork?
It's like wide.
They would like us to have a standard. But if the committee says this doesn't make sense,
keeps all those people out.
Yeah, because people already cut through the kebab place.
Yeah, that's what we were talking about. We weren't sure how to even go about that.
But you two smart enough to realize it.
But I don't think that's right or not.
Yeah.
I
like the idea.
So actually at that lower intersection, like closer to 7, the restaurant complex is already used as a small cut through that most people don't even realize to do. I personally don't use it, but like every once in a while when I'm traveling through there, this is a road I use often. You'll see one person veer off into the restaurant and then cut through to get to 7 just because they don't feel like waiting for the light.
Where Greek places?
Yeah.
So there's a gate here at Big Rock Drive.
Yeah.
And there's another gate at High Rock Way. So they added, 406 homes that only have gated access.
So where was the second gate? But the other one's like within a subdivision, right? Yeah. Like that's King people are probably coming from Potomac. So you're talking like 400 and some people, probably majority of them. Are
Yeah. I mean, I think there's also a size limit too, right?
They didn't have a turn lane.
Like, do you need a developed standard for a data center that doesn't have as much, maybe we set a limit of.
That's what they were just having a sidebar conversation.
Yeah, I think it's up to us. There's some things that just don't. We don't even have to try to develop a standard for, but maybe at some threshold, whatever that is, we ought to have a standard. 1,000 homes, 5,000 homes. I don't know what,
It's something that generates a certain amount of traffic.
Right, yeah. And if you have that, then...
Then you want a gate.
Yeah.
It dictates this traffic study to justify it.
Perhaps.
Versus us having to come up with a calculation.
It applies to everything, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. I think that would be a little waste, so we don't have to figure out the design now. It just puts it back on the traffic engineer to be like, okay, after this much trip generation, even though it doesn't trigger a typical traffic study, now it triggers a traffic study.
And so a professional has to now evaluate it.
The queuing analysis.
The queuing analysis.
But the five people on their private road can have a gate.
Say again?
No. From the last one, of the five people on a little private road, they can have a gate and we're not.
Right. Yeah. Figuring out what that magic number is that triggers a traffic analysis.
Although their gate could be 3 feet from the public road and not one car could sit there.
Right, but that,
I mean, you could have as much impact with five as you could with 400.
I would
but...
say something, yeah.
Dia has something to say on how you impact the road.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was clear that they had discretion. I mean, they could have said something.
They have something to say there. Yeah. They just don't want to say it.
Yeah, they could have.
Did they even notice there was a gate being proposed?
Don't know.
It was on the site plan. The gate was on the site plan.
Right, but there's a lot of things that we put on site plans that I'm like shocked that they didn't notice. Like they don't look at every little detail.
We gotta go off record here.
We're
gonna
get off bombs.
Yeah.
All right.
Are we adjourned?
That's enough.
Ben,
you done?
Nobody looks.
The chair is packing up. Are we adjourned?
We're adjourned. Yes.